Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Met Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, bringing us back to segment number two. I am Jay Flemma, and you are listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Well, everybody, I caught myself there for the first time. I'm going to have to get used to it because I didn't say Jay Flemma of Cyber Golf, although I still am of Cyber Golf. As of August 1st, sadly, the magazine will be ceasing its editorial operation. It's a sad day. It's a goodbye to Cyber Golf, but not a farewell to all of our friends over there. They are moving in a different business model, so the entire editorial staff's gone. Jeff Shelley, my pal, direct descendant of Mary Shelley, the great writer who wrote Frankenstein, and Percy Bysshe Shelley, the terrific poet, and Ray Kell of the 17th century, friend to Lord Byron and many other great writers. Jeff and Marino Pericento, our pal from Pittsburgh, and Tony Deere, the European Tour correspondent, Dave Droshek down in Carolina, Blaine Newnham, who wrote a terrific book on Chambers Bay, a lot of excellent writers on that masthead. But I am, have landed on my feet, as they say, as I'll be bringing all of my stuff over to the Golf News Net. And I'm going to be starting at least two new columns, one on adventure golf travel for those of you that like to play golf and run marathons or go hiking or mountain climbing or skiing. So we'll have all kinds of trips around the world for fun things to do besides play golf and, of course, get our golf fix in playing the true great courses of the world. And then the Rock and Roll Golf Diaries, which we will kick off with two of my old favorites. We're going to talk a little bit about Colonial, the great country club of Ben Hogan, where I had the great pleasure to play with Bowling Pursuit, Texas's favorite sons. And we'll also discuss this weekend's trip. I was watching the Open Championship from the cozy confines of Shea Mosley in Boston for not only two rounds of golf, but also the Foo Fighters concert at Fenway Park. And we will get to that a little bit later. So lots of stuff to look at. www.thegolfnewsnet.com and cybergolf.com/writerscorner. All right, so let's get back to the next segment. We've brought back producer Ryan Ballingy, the grand emperor of all things GNN, and Tony Co-Ro-Ro-Gos, all O's, needs to buy another vowel. My pal from the golf space and from a number of golfers. Boys, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Happy to be back for the second segment.
Yeah, you know, well, hey, you know, when the whole gang gets back together for a hoot. So, but let's talk a little bit about St. Andrews. And in particular, let's talk a little bit about the design of the golf course and how it held up to technology. And also, at the same time, let's talk a little bit about comparing it to Chambers Bay, because I feel Chambers Bay got a bit of a short shift. You know, it was weird. The American course played a little faster and firmer than the British course, slash Scottish course, which played a lot greener and softer. So, Ryan, what did you think about not only how the old course held up against technology, but how it held up in terms of being a links course?
I mean, I think we got some genuine links golf, obviously, unfortunately, with the way that the green speeds were and how low the greens were cut. And spend play for, 10 and a half hours on Saturday, which I think if they had chosen to keep the green, the grass on the putting surface a little bit higher and the speed a little bit lower, they could have played golf, not necessarily would have been good golf or pretty golf, but they could have played golf, and they could have played it the way that they played it for 450 years. But I think overall it did hold up pretty well. The winning scores of the Opens over the last four or five goes has kind of been in that 16, 17 under par range. I mean, you had Tiger at 19 in 2000, and then you kind of went to single digits, the rare sign at 05 for Tiger's second win there. But the thing I have, the issue that I have is that you can't really lengthen the course any more than you already have. You only have so much to work with. You only have property to work with. And you're not going to necessarily just redesign the course and all of this history just to deal with guys that hit the ball 300 and 310 yards off the tee. So I think in one sense it's sad because it's a lot of the architectural elements out of play oftentimes. The time throughout the championship when the wind was right. They were directly in play, and it was beautiful. So it's kind of a hit and miss for me.
Tony, you've played the Old Course a grillion times. You make a point of going over pretty much every year. What are your thoughts?
I was very surprised to see how soft the course was. You know, to see the players taking actual divots with their irons blew my mind. In all the times I've played there, the ground has been so hard that you can barely get a tee in the tee box. And a divot is just completely out of the question. And carrying a ball mark in your, or ball, a divot tool in your pocket is just ridiculous because there would be no marks on the green. And you had no business hitting the green when I played it anyway because you'd have to hit your shots 30 yards short because of how hard the ground is. The ball would bounce up and roll and roll and roll. So very surprising for me to see the players taking divots, being able to sort of throw more dart shots at pins and have them stick. So, you know, when it's like that, you're going to see a birdie fest, which is pretty much what we saw. I would have liked to have seen things be a little harder, sort of force a little bit more of that link style, a little bit lower, short game shots and a few less lob wedges around. I tell you this, the next time I go there, I'm not bringing a lob wedge. It's, a club that should never be used around there, in my opinion. Unless maybe you're in the road hole bunker or, you know, just trying to, get out of, you know, one of these steep face revetted, bunkers. So, you know, I was a little disappointed. I would have liked to have seen it play a little harder, a little faster. As far as the length goes, you know, if you can hit it straight and you can hit it long, then great. But as we saw with, Dustin Johnson, you know, and even a few other players that, you know, like even like Padraig Harrington was right there. And, you know, once you find the course or you start driving a little sideways and you start missing there, there are places you simply cannot miss that are extremely penal and will cost you a double bogey or worse.
And without even being a water hazard or out of bounds, you'll stand at trees. You know, it'll be just an excellent set of contours that just won't allow you to get the ball anywhere near the hole. You know, and that is this true secret of great golf course architecture. I agree with both of you. It would have been nice to have played just a little firmer and faster so that we had just a few more of those interesting, you know, balls going back to guys' feet, golf balls ending up sideways to players, balls ending up on the wrong half of the double greens. But they did have a little too much control, yet you got one shot less, you know, for a winning score than Rui Westhuizen had when he won, even though there were so many more players in the red. You know, we've never seen this many red scores and that high a cut number, you know, in a major in a long time.
You know, the locals in St. Andrews are very proud of the old course, as they should be. And, you know, they don't like seeing the course getting beaten up and sort of, you know, turning into a dartboard. They want to see some higher scores. And it's funny, when you go into the pubs there and you see all these golf photos and golf memorabilia around, whenever you see shots of Tiger Woods and his 19 under, every one of those photos has someone has written on it with a Sharpie, "No wind." So,
yeah.
You know, it's pretty funny. And, you know, we didn't see the old course, you know, strong as she could have been, but it was still super entertaining. It was a little bit more like a Masters to me with the, you know, the Sunday runs and the 66s. It was definitely entertaining to watch.
Well, Augusta National was in many places designed similar to St. Andrews, so. Now, you bring up another great point, though. For all three of Woods' Open Championship victories, he caught phenomenal sunshine, you know, not many clouds, not much rain at all, and definitely no wind, okay? The same thing happened when he brought Royal Liverpool to its knees. A golf course with no defense except the wind. You know, and Woods didn't start to learn to play well in the wind until Kiawah Island, when you recall he played so well in that crosswind in round two, when he and DJ actually had the round two lead before fading as the weekend came. But I thought that St. Andrews, like you said, needed to be a little drier, needed to be a little firmer, but it was still beautiful to see her, and we will see her in five more years. And next year we get a wonderful treat. We get to go back to Royal Troon. So Ryan and Tony, give me your impressions of the next great Open Championship venue.
Yeah, Tru is one of the courses I know very little about in the rotation, but I mean, my memory of it is unfortunately or unfortunately, Todd Hamilton and what he did in 04 to beat Ernie Els. So, I mean, I'm interested to see it come back. I'm obviously, there's a lot more social circumstance around it with how they're changing the membership to make it a little bit more equitable for women to be a part of it, full members of the club instead of just the women's club. So that will be an interesting backdrop for it. But I think we should get a really good championship. I don't think we'll get another one-off winner in Todd Hamilton. The British has been on a really good run lately, a very good champion, a very fun champion. So I think we'll get a good one.
Tony, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I don't know a ton about Royal Troon either. It's not even as long as the old course, if I recall. You know, I think weather conditions are going to be a big factor. You know, if it's benign, I think you're going to see some fairly low scores.
Troon has a good amount of hurly-burly movement in the earth. A lot of great moguls, a lot of great bumps. You know, in the fairways, the good rumble links. It plays out and back, and very much like Turnberry and Lytham, you know, it surrenders birdies like pork pies on the opening holes, but when you come back down into the wind the other way, it's much more difficult to finish. And on the note, I do want to take a moment and have a little aside here. I do have to, Mike Tirico is a great announcer. We all like him. He's a lot of fun on ESPN. I wish it would teach him there is such a thing as a pick six in the NFL, because every time somebody returns an interception for a touchdown, he acts like he's never seen one in his life. But he did make a few mistakes during this golf coverage. He did tend to dumb it down a little bit, and some things were flat out incorrect. Like when he said the course goes out and back, you know, that's where we get the term from, out from the town and back to the town. That's actually incorrect. Out and back refers to out from the mercantile ships into the town and then back into the ships. Because remember, it was the Dutch who ultimately taught the Scots how to play, and it was the Scots that laid out the courses and, you know, caught the disease and let it metastasize, you know, so that by the time the Dutch came back for the next round of mercantile meetings, they said, oh, no, we've created a monster. So... But Troon will be a really terrific test, too. I think we'll see a much lower score. Remember, Todd Hamilton won with 4 under, so
yeah.
I don't think we're going to get ourselves a 19 under or a 13 or 14 under. It will defend itself well. The next major championship venue coming up, we still have one more this year, is Whistling Straits. A course that I very much like, by a designer that I very much like. Even though it is try to find me Wisconsin, you know, tucked in behind a million mounds and cow farms and on the edge of the lake that you almost can't get to, it really has a lot of compelling drama, both in terms of the architecture and in terms of the finishes. So preview the PGA Championship for us now, 3 weeks away.
Well, I think Whistling Straits, you know, it's a much longer course. I think the horses you're going to see rising to the top of this leaderboard are going to be the Dustin Johnsons and Jason Days and Bubba Watsons, as opposed to the course managers like, our champion from today. I think the shorter hitters are going to have a little bit of difficulty this championship. So it should be fun to watch to see, you know, if Rory is going to be back by then. Do we know, schedule-wise, is he going to be recovered by then?
My money is on no, because that injury can take, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. And he's going to have to push off on that heel.
He's one of the few, you know, that could, he has the game all around either way. I mean, length or touch, you know, so he could definitely be, you know, a factor if he's in the field. But even if he's there, I suppose he's going to be pretty rusty, you know. So, yeah, I look for a longer hitter this time around, I would say.
Ryan, your thoughts?
Yeah, you saw those results in 2010. I mean, the guys that were in the playoff are nearly in the playoff. Rory was nearly in the playoff. Dustin was nearly in the playoff. And obviously, Keimer can can bat it pretty far, and certainly Bubba Watson can. Zach Johnson didn't do too badly 5 years ago. I mean, he was in the hunt there toward the tail end and was kind of the forgotten guy that got close. So I think you can do really well hitting it modestly long, but it's all going to depend on setup. I mean, Kerry Hague is a guy who loves to give a fair setup, but I'll be very curious to see how he does with the third time at Whistling Straits. But then you look at what this course played like what 6 years prior, so it was at 04, and yet Vijay Bomber in the playoffs, and they had two mid-range guys in Justin Leonard and Chris DeMarco had a chance. So I think it's a pretty fair course for you got to be a little bit longer than average to be able to do well, but by and large, PGA makes it pretty equitable for most anybody to be able to contend, as long as you can hit good approach shots and hit targets that are smaller than you think. And so I think if that's the case and you're on your game from tee to green, you've got a really good chance to win. Because I don't feel like he puts a ton of emphasis on putting. He puts it on accuracy from the fairway. So if that's the case, then I think you got to look at somebody who can hit the drive really long and leave a wedge in the hole. And that's why Dustin Johnson did so well, because he was able to overpower the golf course. Or you could be a game manager, but you've just got to be absolutely on from tee to green, or otherwise you have no chance.
A lot of penalties around Whistling Straits. So you definitely have to carry the ball out a long way. You have to learn to read a Pete Dye golf course correctly. You know, there's the Tiger line is usually dangerously close to the most dangerous place on the golf hole, and the safer way you play, the tougher your angle is going to be in. Extremely smart golf course, intelligent golf courses. So it's going to take a super smart guy as well, which surprises me because you don't really think of Bubba Watson, who almost won there last time, as a super smart guy. But Martin Kaymer, however, does fit that bill, as does Vijay. You know, Vijay's length, sometimes overshadows what a good course manager he is. So it'll be a lot of fun. We will be there, Ryan. It'll be my last assignment for CyberGolf, but at the same time, it'll be my first assignment as a reporter for Golf News Network.
So there you go, and I'll be out there as well. So I'm very excited to get to see the last major of the year, get to see Wisconsin, take a little trip up north to go to Green Bay and go see Titletown and see my Packers, maybe get a little bit of training camp in. So it's going to be a great time.
I, on the other hand, will be playing golf in my spare time. I will be going to Lawsonia and Erin Hills. And, oh, yeah, one extra bonus for that today. We will have another article in the Rock and Roll Golf Series. I'll be seeing Fish the night before the tournament starts.
Nice.
At Alpine Valley, okay, a place I've never been, but one that all of the traveling, all of the Wookiees, all of the traveling hippies, all of my well-traveled trust fund puppy friends, trippies, truppies, whatever you want to call them, everybody likes Alpine, and it's one of the few I've never seen. You know, I haven't done Alpine, I haven't done Deer Creek, so it'll be fun to knock Alpine off of the list. Everybody, we're going to be back with the second half of the show. A big thank you to Ryan Valenti, our head producer and our chief muckety muck at the Golf News Network, and Tony Coralogos, chief muckety muck over at the Golf Space and the number one blog in golf, Hooked on Golf blog. Guys, we got to do this again real soon.
Thanks for having me, Jay. Good to talk to you guys, and we'll see you next time.
Going to leave you in the very capable hands of DJ Q. We'll be right back after this.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute. This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Place on the Golf News Net Radio Network.